Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics.
Sean Payton was horrible in clock management. That should never be the case with this New Orleans Saints team.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you. Always look forward to this time of the day every day. And again, we do have a fun show lined up. Still not a whole lot of sports to talk about, but we're going to continue on the local front. Earlier this week, we caught up with athletic director and girls basketball coach Ted Bianco at Carbon High, and we talked about the all-state selections. Carbon had a few on the girls' side of the court, Abby Sacamano, Jordan Bianco, and McKenna Blank. Today we're going to flip. We're going to talk Emory High School boys basketball. We'll be joined by athletic director Todd Jeffs. Coach Jeffs had two players on his team receive All-State recognition. That's Jordan Ecker and also Brax Jensen, who just put together a phenomenal season. So I'm looking forward to talking with Coach Todd Jeffs. We'll also get an update on the possibility of a spring sports season. We still have hope in that regard. We still have hope for some baseball and softball and golf and tennis and cross country. They haven't ruled it out just yet. The Utah High School Activities Association, they have not canceled it yet. There is hope that maybe we could get a condensed season in the month of May. We'll talk to Coach Todd Jeffs about that. It's coming up in just a bit. Also on the show today, we'll talk Major League Baseball. We'll be joined by Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher and now serving as an analyst for the San Francisco Giants. There are a couple of storylines in Major League Baseball that we're going to dive into. For one, will Major League Baseball expand the postseason if, in fact, we have a shortened season? I believe the correct answer to that is yes, and I do believe it's the right answer as well. See, here's the thing. There's no precedent for what we've had right now. We've seen shortened seasons with lockouts before, but this is completely different. You know, we may have games where there's no fans in the stands. I also believe that that's a strong possibility. How would that affect players? Bill Lasky spent time in the big leagues as a pitcher, so I want to get his thoughts on that. How would that affect a pitcher throwing in a stadium with no crowd noise? I mean, because think about it. Communication between the catcher, you want to have a mound visit, everyone's going to hear what you're talking about. That changes the game of baseball drastically. I think that's a fun topic. And also, how does this affect the minor leagues, especially AAA? Because Major League Baseball, front offices get manipulative with the way things work within the front office. For instance, I believe the number is 171 days. If a player serves 171 days, it counts as a year on his contract. So if you bring up a rookie and he plays 171 days, that's year one. If he doesn't play 171 days, we just saw this with Chris Bryant, right, where he fought that he probably should have at least got one season worth of work in the Cubs. No, the Cubs brought him up in proper time. How does that affect the big leagues? The way teams manage rookie contracts and times of service if we just have the major leagues and we have a condensed minor league season? A lot of questions regarding Major League Baseball. We'll dive into that in just a bit. Let's take a look at some of the news coming out of the NFL. Jadeveon Clowney, hands down the biggest free agent name still available. It was thought that Clowney wanted close to $20 million per season. He didn't get it. And now he's asking for a number closer to $17 million. And the Seattle Seahawks and Tennessee Titans seem to be the most interested teams in signing him right now. That's according to ESPN. A lot of business still to be made in the NFL. There are some really attractive free agents out there. Clowney, remember, he was traded from the Texans to Seattle. Houston knew that this was going to be a problem. They got what they could for Clowney. Seattle rented him on the cheap with a third-round pick. And at times, Clowney was really good. He's only 27 years old. Okay, but again, injuries popped up. In week 10, he suffered an injury. He elected to postpone surgery until the offseason. That left him playing in pain for most of the second half of the season. But again, injuries seem to be a key reoccurrence for Jadeveon Clowney, and that probably has to be a lot of the reason why he's not getting $20 million, because there are teams out there that could afford him and could use an efficient pass rusher around the outside. But still, at this particular time, Clowney remains the most attractive free agent, and now he's looking for a $17 million a year deal. Let's move on. Let's talk NFL draft. I'm really, really anticipating the NFL draft at the end of the month now that we are in the month of April, because there's just not a lot to talk about right now. What's going to happen as far as the NFL draft? How's it going to be handled? Is it going to be like it was, decades ago, right? There's no media or very little media allowed. It's just a little conference room. Is it going to look like a fantasy draft live? Like, how's the NFL going to handle this? The New Orleans Saints don't have any NFL facilities. They're closed because of the coronavirus pandemic. So the Saints, they had to find a new space to set up their makeshift draft headquarters. They turned to a local brewery. How cool is this? They have set up shop in the Dixie Brewing Company facility in New Orleans, which is also owned by Gail Benson, and it is closed to the public. So now they're at a brewery. That's a historical night for NFL football. Draft headquarters in a brewery. That's what's happening right now in the national sports scene. We do have some great conversations coming up. Again, we're going to be joined by Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan basketball team. We'll talk about the All-State selections, and again, we'll look at the possibility of maybe getting some high school sports a little bit later on down the road, maybe in a few weeks. What are the possibilities of that? Plus, we'll also talk to Bill Lasky, some Major League Baseball talk. It's all coming up here on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're going to talk more high school basketball today here on the show. Again, late last week, the 3A All-State selections were announced. And earlier in the week, we talked about Carbon High. Today, we're going to talk Emory High School, the Emory Boys Squad, had not only Brax Jensen, but Jordan Ecker receiving All-State recognition. Joining us right now to talk about that and more, we have head coach Todd Jeffs, also athletic director at Emory High. Coach, I always look forward to the conversations. Thanks again for the time today.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
Coach, let's talk about the exciting news that came out late last week. We had a couple of All-State selections on the boys' basketball squad this season, Brax Jensen and Jordan Ecker. Brax, a first-team All-Stater, and we can start with Brax. There should be no surprise here at all. Brax put together one of the best all-around seasons we've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, he was just phenomenal the whole year. You know, he really set the tone for our team, and so many good things happened with our team, and everything that we did was through him, and so glad to see him get the recognition and respect from, you know, the other coaches in 3A to make that first team selection, and just a great kid, great player, and good results.
If we look at points per game, Coach, he averaged just under 22 throughout the entire season, but the stat that has impressed me the most, he averaged almost 25 points per game in region play. And for those who either forgot or didn't know, this region was the toughest in the state by far.
Oh, yeah, that, you know, his region season was incredible. He got into a group late in that season, the second half, you know, when we played everybody the second time in our region play, where he was just, you know, he could beat people off the dribble. He could beat people with a three-point shot. He was setting his teammates up, and he was just incredible. It was just so fun to watch and watch him do what he was capable of doing, and just like I said, you know, everything we did went through him, and I trusted him completely with his decision-making, and good things happened.
Coach, in a high school basketball game where you play 32 minutes, that's not a lot of action, yet Brax managed to average close to 22 points per game, but he also averaged 8.6 assists per game. And I don't have the next-gen stat of what the what the usage rate was, but when you just take that into consideration, 22 points and almost 9 assists per game in a 32-minute contest, there wasn't a whole lot that he wasn't doing.
Oh, it, you know, speaks to his playmaking ability and his decision-making process. He is an incredible basketball player and does great things with the ball, and we trust him completely. You know, if you watch this play, and I know you did, game in and game out, we put the ball in his hands and allowed him the opportunity to make plays for himself and his teammates, you know, and I think Connor Willstead and Jordan Ecker both just fed off him completely, and those other kids, you know, Seth Justice hit some threes that were a direct result of him, and then Justin Rasmussen just cleaned things up. But truthfully, everything we did went through Brax. The ball got in his hands, and we trusted him to just make plays and make decisions for everybody.
He dropped a season-high 34 against South Sevier in a game that was a 7-point win, Coach. And that 34 has a lot of context. I mean, we've seen instances where players will score 40 points and there's not a lot of context behind that 40. You know, maybe it's garbage time. When he scored 34 against South Sevier, we needed all 34 points. And so I guess my question is there a specific performance that stands out to you with Brax this past year where you just shook your head and said, wow?
Well, I think the game you mentioned, South Sevier, was incredible. He was on fire that night, couldn't miss, you know, pulling up from extremely deep and doing damage that way. I think, you know, in our region play, the game at San Juan was another one where I thought he took charge late in the game and really carried us through to a win. And then the crazy finish at Grand was just incredible playmaking throughout the last 2.5 minutes of the game. It just went back and forth, and he was involved in each of those plays. And so I just, you know, it's really hard to pinpoint one game or one situation where he made the difference, because truthfully he was a difference throughout the entire region play.
Yeah, and one play in particular that pretty much saved a region championship was the desperation 0.7 seconds where he was able to catch a ball, draw a foul against Grand, and make two free throws.
Yeah, that was just, you know, you think back at the situation that we were in, 1.5 seconds to go, full length of the floor to travel, and, you know, to try to make a play in that situation, and he came up with it.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan Boys basketball team. Coach, let's move over and talk about Jordan Ecker. He established himself as, you know, I guess the perfect running mate. This was such a potent backcourt duo throughout the year. Jordan averages 21 points per game, and he earns an All-State second team selection. Well-deserved.
Yeah, he fed off everything that Brax did. Brax could draw defenders away from him, and you know, Jordan's a super catch-and-shoot kid. He does all his homework before he catches the ball, so as soon as the ball's in his hands, he's ready to shoot it, and it really paid off for him. You know, I think late in the year, as teams kind of figured out what we were doing, the respect that he garnered from the opposing teams was incredible. I think we saw so many times the last 10 games of the season where he was just face-guarded throughout the you know, the entire defensive possession, just to not allow him to get the ball in any place. And so, you know, it's a tough thing to defend when you got a penetrator like Brax, and then a guy who can catch and shoot like Jordan. That's spreads defenses thin, because, you know, just occupies so much of their attention.
Obviously, he ends his career with a great game, 23 points against Judge Memorial. But, Coach, if we go back to the game against San Juan, it was a thriller. It was a 5-point win. Jordan posted a career best, 24 points. He was nearly unstoppable in that game.
Yeah, you know, and again, it all of his success from the 3-point range really comes from Brax's penetration. So the combination of those two kids working together was just incredible. But Jordan spent so much time, you know, the last year and a half, 2 years, working on his catch and shoot ability, and he just if you watch him play, you know, he really steps into that shot, and the ball's not in his hands very long, you know, tenth of a second, 2/10 of a second, and he gives it a chance every time he shoots it, and just you know, really a stellar season for both those kids.
Coach, for someone that's been around as long as you have, when you see these individual awards come out, what's your take on them? I mean, do you look forward to these kinds of things? Does it serve a purpose for the entire program when you see kids get the state recognition? I'm just curious as to your thoughts on these individual awards.
I like the individual awards, and I look forward to see who makes them. It's often disappointing. I think Kyler Wilstead really deserves some postseason recognition, and he didn't get it. And you know, you think back last year, Brax was a phenomenal player last year and got a third team selection. But you know, so much of it's determined on who else is on your team and other coaches voting. And of course, the champion's going to get a little bit more attention than the other teams. But I think there's so many quality players and only five first team selections. It gets very competitive when you get to those top five kids in the state. And you look at the Deseret News selections, and I think every kid on that team was deserving, and there's some great ball players there.
I'm glad you brought up Kyler Wilstead, because that was my initial thought in seeing the release of the first, second, third, and even the honorable mention teams. Coaches will vote on this, and coaches don't always get to watch every single game, right? If you just look at a box score, I don't think box scores do Kyler justice at all in what he was able to accomplish throughout the year and the importance he had on a team that finished third in the state.
No, I agree with you completely. He was so much a part of us, and he was our enforcer that just, he didn't take crap from anybody that we played, and he stood up. Even though he was undersized night in and night out, he stood up to the bigger guys and competed with them and battled for rebounds and really established a physical presence for us. And he was the guy that really took care of that for us and so valuable to our team. And unfortunately, he doesn't get some postseason recognition, but he deserves it, you know. And I can see how things like that happen. You, as a coach, you fill out your ballot and you kind of look at different guys on different teams, and you pick out the guy that hurt you the most when you played him, and say, well, that's their vote. And as a result, I think, you know, look at other teams voting for kids off our team. Obviously, Brax and Jordan get the most attention and the most recognition for what took place, but I think Kyler was every bit as big a part of what went on with our season as those two kids.
Again, Coach Todd Jeff's our guest right now. Coach, before I let you go, you also serve as the athletic director at Emory High School, and boy, these are bizarre times to say the least, aren't they?
Oh, it really is. You know, just in a matter of a couple of days, things go from just business as usual to just as bizarre as can be. And I realize that, you know, sports are a small part of what's going on nationally, but it's a big part for these kids. They devote so much of their time and energy for two or three years to get to a chance to compete in a spring sport. And they get that taken away from them, and it's a little bit disheartening, but there's still a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. I'm hoping we can get some competitions in May, and there's nothing really been set forth time-wise as far as whether that's going to happen or not, but there's still some hope there, and I think our kids are still working towards that and still hopeful that they'll get to compete a little bit in May.
Yeah, I know as the AD, I mean, I don't know what your role is with the other coaches. It's got to be tough on a coach, too, not knowing if you're going to have to jump back into spring action or not.
Well, and it's, you know, the real tough part is no contact with your players. I mean, at this time of the year, usually you're with those kids 3 or 4 hours a day and then 10 or 12 hours on a road trip. And you know, you might be able to text out and say, hey, stay ready. But you know how kids are. That kind of gets moved down on their priority list. And so staying ready and being ready is a different thing when you're not able to attend practice and to have that personal contact with your coach day in and day out. And so it's, and spring sports are so difficult anyway, because you're really cramming so many games into basically a 2 month period. And now, you know, the whole center section of that 2 month period is just taken out. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of the Activities Association when we do get cleared to get back, and everybody's just really in limbo, like the whole nation. Everybody just kind of waiting and seeing what happens, and when it does happen, we'll make the best of it.
Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartan basketball team. Coach, it's always fun to get you on and talk a little basketball and high school sports. Thank you very much for the time, and you and your family stay safe.
Hey, same with you, Jordan, and thanks for all you do.
As always, it's my pleasure, Coach. That's Coach Todd Jeffs of the Emory Spartans, again, taking out the time to join us. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're going to flip over to the national side. We'll talk Major League Baseball right after this.
Here's the pitch. Soto swings and hits one high and deep to right. This is way back. Going. Goodbye. The kick in. Here it comes. Swing and a miss. The Washington Nationals are the world champions.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
This is what I say. Run away.
Time for more baseball talk here on Drive Time Sports. If you're like me, you still got the itch for baseball. Yesterday, we went over some baseball movies that could perhaps scratch that itch. Today, we're going to talk more about the game, and if we get baseball back, what is the season going to look like? And it also affects the minor leagues as well. We're joined right now by a great friend of mine, great friend of the show, Bill Lasky. Bill, always a pleasure to get you on the show. I appreciate the time again today.
Oh, always enjoy talking baseball with you and your fans, and hoping that everybody is safe and healthy and staying in put and listening to you and radio, and there's no sports. So just kind of staying close to your friends and your family and being safe is the key two words.
No question. There's no question about it. And of course, we all look forward to that day where we can get life back to at least semi-normal. Hopefully that's not too far off. And I think when we become semi-normal once again, that's when baseball reappears. But as you and I were talking about off of the cuff, this season may be anything but normal.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an experiment when you start thinking about it. Baseball owners to players to unions are going to really have to think about this and understand it's going to take a while for these guys to get back in shape. How much does it need? And what about all the minor leagues and how they're going to be affected? They're working every day. There's a lot of interaction between the owners as well as the general managers and baseball operations. And it's all speculation, as we can talk about, but at least they're talking about it. If it does come back in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, what will happen?
Yeah, definitely. And I know one of the rumors that were floated out was potentially expanding the postseason. Now, we had postseason expansion just a few years back, and I'm actually a big fan of it. I do like the one-game playoff. But now we're talking about possibly a 14-team playoff, maybe even a 16-team playoff. And, Bill, when you condense a season, so many things could happen. I mean, you just look at last year. I remember the conversation you and I were having mid-season about the Washington Nationals and would Dave Martinez keep his job. Then Washington goes on a tear. They win the World Series. Obviously, that can't happen when you have a condensed season, right? There's so much emphasis on winning early. Are you for or against the idea of an extended postseason if we get a shortened season this year?
Yeah, I believe so. I think you could go into October. I like some of the thought patterns. If it does get too cold, they go into a neutral site, which would probably be indoors. These are all ideas and things like that I think will work. I just don't understand how you can push this into 14 teams and do it all in such a short order, because it's really going to be who's going to come out hot first and who's going to take the lead and hold on to the lead. And maybe the stronger teams do prevail right off the bat because of the thoughts that they have going into the games, their experience in the games. It's going to be a big Q&A at the end because, everybody's got to vote on this. The players have to fall into that category too. And I just think it's going to go back into how big of a roster they're going to expand to, because they're going to have to do that. They're talking about double hitters on the same day at 7 innings per game. I like that idea, quicker game, see how that works. But also, I just think the safety of the players, is going to be the main concern.
Safety of the players, and of course, we can't forget about TV revenue, right? TV dollars, that's important as well, and I guess with an extended postseason, that does give Major League Baseball an opportunity to recoup some of the money that's going to be lost.
I believe so, too, and I think every fan is going to be glued onto their favorite team or MLB Network or ESPN to see some of the better teams in United States play. I just wonder if there's going to be fans in the ballpark watching Japan and Korea and both of those baseball leagues are playing with no fans. Japan had a couple teams with a mask on. So we're going to see what that's going to equate with United States baseball, if that's how they're going to start. And right off the bat in spring training, when they go back to Arizona and Florida, are they going to play those games with no fans too? So you just don't know. I think everybody's going to be going to the radio to listen to games. It's going to be announced that way as well as TV, and that might be the future of watching baseball.
Again, Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants, joining us on the phone as we talk Major League Baseball. Bill, with that being said, you just mentioned playing with no fans, and I honestly believe we see that at some point in time in this country. I don't know if it's Major League Baseball, I don't know if it's NBA, I don't know if it's the NFL, how long this is going to last, but I believe at some point in time we will see it. As a former player, as a former pitcher, would that affect you at all, playing in a stadium with no fans?
It would be totally changed. I mean, you would have to really lock in, concentrate a little bit more into the game with your catcher. There'd be a lot of talk between teams, you know that. You'd have the chatter chirping from every dugout. But that's baseball. You're going to play, try to play at the highest level, concentrate as much as you can. And you're definitely going to hear the crack of the bat amongst two teams playing. It would be strange. It would be difficult. But you would have to lock in because those numbers are going to count in a short season or even competition to try to get to the World Series if there's one.
Yeah, I know that right now there's such a big emphasis on sign stealing with everything that went down with the Astros and the Red Sox. With that being said, you know, you see a pitcher and a catcher have their meeting on the mound, and the pitcher will usually cover his mouth to prevent lip reading, right, from any video type recordings that may be going on. Look, that would be out the door. There's no way that you would be able to have a conversation with your catcher on the mound without everybody hearing it if there's no fans in the stands.
It's true. There's a lot of things you wouldn't hear. You know, you start talking about defense and offense and different type of guys warming up in a bullpen. I mean, it's going to be real strange to watch America baseball in these beautiful stadiums with no fans. Hey, you know what? I'm looking forward to it if that's how it has to be to get baseball back on the field. That's what we're just going to have to change. We're all changing through this virus, and you know what? To be safe, if we can get baseball back like that, I think every fan would just love to watch the sport. I know you and I are big sports fans, and we talk about sports. Hey, you know, it's difficult not watching sport each day, but we are getting through it.
No question. And Bill, you brought this up, the idea that, well, this is going to change the minor leagues as well. I mean, if you have to expand a roster, there's a lot of ins and outs that go into it, especially with the minor leagues itself. And you have actually heard some rumblings of what could possibly be a resolution to the minor leagues this season.
Yeah, one of the biggest things is letting your players go to the minor league cities. Of course, these minor league cities are all over the United States. And you have a lot of young talent in the minor leagues. You're talking 18, 19-year-old kids, early 20s. And I think what Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball are talking about is not doing that, literally shutting down all minor league baseball and keeping most of your surplus of your minor leaguers in their spring training sites. So it'd be mostly Florida and Arizona, and they would continue to play games there. But again, it would be totally different, but they would maintain what these players are eating, sleeping, where they're hanging out, and continuing to monitor them as the couple of months of minor league baseball come about. Now, of course, you know, you're talking maybe July, August, because usually the minor league season's over that first part of September. But at the big league level, you have to have some players definitely in surplus because of injuries and opportunities for more pitchers to be on the roster. So it is something they're talking about. When you sit back and you start thinking about it, those are their players. That's their organization. Those are the players that are there under their wing. They have to protect them any which way. And if that's the way to do it for a couple months, that's the smart way to really outline your investment and to keep it safe.
Well, there's no question, and I think one of the nuances of the minor league system and how it works with a big league ball club, there's so much from a business aspect. I mean, for instance, if a player finishes his rookie season, I believe the number is 171 days of service time, then that club's going to retain control over him for another season. We saw this with Chris Bryant and the Chicago Cubs just a couple of years ago. So if you have a prized prospect like that, and you want to be really manipulative, I guess, on when you call him up, you better make sure you have control over this guy, knowing where he's at and what he's doing at all times. Because, I mean, we're talking about a full another season on a rookie deal, and that's a lot of money for these teams.
It sure is, and if that even comes about, you don't know if they're even just going to try to keep the AAA players and literally AA and A ball and rookie ball. You take the year off, and we start again next spring. As this virus continues, we don't know how many months it's going to keep us in lock in place. And these are things that, like I said earlier, Major League Baseball, Minor League Baseball, at least they're talking about. They're trying to get a picture painted. It's difficult. It's all speculation. But I think these points are valid when you're talking about high draft picks, how much money they invest them. I want my top prospect to go to, now I'm just throwing a city out there, Des Moines, Iowa. Nothing wrong with Des Moines, Iowa, don't get me wrong. But he'd have to go rent an apartment, live under Des Moines, Iowa grocery stores and things like that that he has to get accustomed to. And like I said, it's an example. I like Des Moines, Iowa. So, but those are the things that is out of their control and their command. So in this point, I think they want to structure something where they can feed them, they can watch them, they can have them grow with the organization, working out every day, a more planned look ahead. And why not? If it's only going to be 1 month, 30 days, 60 days, that they can come back and compete.
Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now. Bill, we could end with this, and it's something I just thought of off of the top of my head. I've been waiting for about a month, month and a half, for Major League Baseball to reveal the results of what went down with the Boston Red Sox. I honestly forgot about that until just a moment ago. It popped back into my head. Right, this whole thing with the offseason and when the season is actually going to begin, I think it has actually taken away some of the sting and some of the public outrage of what happened with the Houston Astros. And right now, the Boston Red Sox, that whole particular instance, it seems like it's distant, at least in the minds of fans.
Yeah, it probably helps out the Astros the most because they were getting, you know, razzed through spring training, got hit a few times. But I'm surprised that they haven't come out with what they were going to do with Boston. I would have thought Boston would say, hey, slam us now so we can get over it and understand what we have to do to move forward. They might know it because it's internally. But at the same time, I'm surprised that that hasn't been announced, and I would really like to see what they're going to do to Boston. So we saw Joey Cora walk away, so you know he's going to be suspended. And what's next for the Red Sox? So I think these are things that, as you and I talk, that's going to come out sooner or later, hopefully sooner, and continue the process just like the Astros.
It would definitely give us something to talk about, that's for sure, when it comes out. Again, Bill Lasky, our guest right now. Bill, it is always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work, because I know right now you're still extremely active, especially on the air.
Yeah, well, I'm doing KNBR Radio here in San Francisco. It's a sports leader. I'm doing weekend shows there, just interviewing some different people. Just staying active with it, as well as during the week jumping on different shows across Northern California. And it's just insight that I'm finding out through friends of mine that are in baseball, and I'm communicating with them through the days, just picking up a phone call and I'm chit-chatting. And a lot of that minor league stuff came from a couple minor league play-by-play guys, because I wanted to know what they were thinking, because their jobs are interrupted also. So that was kind of the news, and I thought it was pretty good news, and I was glad to share that with you today. And as I do each week, we'll talk and I'll find out some more stuff just to get it on the airs and have people understand what is happening in the baseball world as much as we know.
Fantastic stuff as always, Bill. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll catch up again soon.
Excellent. Hey, stay safe and be healthy.
You do the same. Bill Lasky, again, our guest, talking Major League Baseball. We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM live from the Auto Forum Studios.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
Back to close out this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Forum Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. I'm going to bring in Travis Anderson to help close out this segment. Travis, I want you to think about this. Which athlete has had the most interesting or the most jaw-dropping career as a professional athlete? And it's not just based on success. It's based on trials, tribulations, comebacks. Which athlete has had the most bizarre career path? Most interesting, I should say, not bizarre.
Most interesting? I'm going to go LeBron James.
See, I'm going to go a completely opposite direction here, and this is who we're going to focus tomorrow's show on. To me, it's Tiger Woods. Think about this. Tiger Woods, in 1996, turned professional.
Mm-hmm.
At that particular time, as a 20-year-old kid, he had the most lucrative golf endorsements of all time for Nike and Titleist. And beginning in around, 2007, 2008, injuries started piling up. We started to see that Tiger was mortal. 2009 comes, and it was just a complete jaw-dropping, oh my gosh, train wreck.
Thanksgiving, right? Wasn't that what it was?
Yeah, it was. 2009 was insane, the end of 2009 for Tiger. And then it looked as if it was one thing after another. There were the PEDs. There was the arrest, the DUI arrest that he had in 2017, and you're starting to think, this is it. This is going to be a very sad ending to one of the, if not the greatest golfing career that we have ever seen. And even when Tiger was struggling, golf ratings were elite when Tiger was playing. Tiger could not make the cut. It didn't matter. People were watching when Tiger was golfing. If you turned on ESPN or you turned on Fox Sports, you would see Tiger miss the cut before you saw Jordan Spieth or Rory McIlroy or whoever. You would see Tiger struggling, right? Then he comes back and he wins the Masters in 2019, and then he gets the Presidential Medal of Freedom Award. I don't know that you could really ever have an athlete that has been at the pinnacle and has dropped to the level of Tiger Woods only to climb back up because he was the laughingstock of sports. He was. He was a laughingstock of sports.
He was.
Yeah. I think Tiger Woods has the most fascinating career for an elite professional athlete that we have ever seen. Look, you bring up LeBron, and don't get me wrong. LeBron, it's been fascinating, right? Because this guy is one of the greatest, but he's hated by half of the audience. He's loved by the other half. And a lot of that he's done to himself by team jumping. But it is fascinating. It is. Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson, to me, is one of the most overrated fighters in the history of boxing. Tyson, in his prime, served a prison sentence for a rape conviction, came back and won the heavyweight title, and then he was humbled once again when his flaws were exposed by any elite fighter that he ever faced. But still, Tyson was never the joke of boxing, right? LeBron was never the joke of basketball.
But Tiger was good with golf. Yeah.
He was a joke.
I mean, people just, you know, made fun of him and just... You know,
constantly.
Basically just, you know, wrote him out of the game of golf. And the only reason why I used to tune in to watch golf was for Tiger Woods.
So you agree with me?
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah, this is one of the most fascinating careers ever. I mean, look, Kobe Bryant went through my senior thesis in college. I wrote it on the apologia tactics of Kobe Bryant and Tiger Woods. I used to compare and contrast. And for those of you who are unaware, an apologia is how they tried to repair their public image. And look, Kobe and his PR people, right out of the gate following the aftermath of Colorado, they nailed it. Kobe lost endorsements. He lost big endorsements. But Kobe
Sprite,
did all
McDonald's,
the...
Sprite, yeah.
He lost everything. Nutella, Adidas.
Adidas basically kicked him to the curb.
He lost everything from an endorsement standpoint. Right, but Kobe took the correct steps, and before you knew it, Kobe was back on top. Kobe was one of the most beloved, if not the most beloved athlete from anywhere, say, from 2007... all the way to the point to where he retired. I mean, Kobe was beloved, right? His PR people knocked it out of the park. Tiger Woods had a different personality. Okay, and so tomorrow on the show, we're going to be joined by Kurt Sampson. He's a longtime golf author. He loves the game. He's been around the game his entire life. He's wrote many, many golf books, but he recently released one called Roaring Back, The Fall and Rise of Tiger Woods. And I want you to think about that title for a moment, okay? The Fall and Rise. Typically, it's the rise and fall, right? But Tiger was at a level that we have never seen before. And I also think one thing that doesn't help Tiger, right, when Tyson went through his issues, when Kobe went through his issues, social media didn't exist. Social media was in its heyday, 2009, 2010, to where we're at today, and that didn't help Tiger.
No, it didn't.
I mean, the National Enquirer obviously had something against him. You couldn't get on Facebook or Twitter without seeing some sort of slapstick comment towards Tiger. That didn't help matters any. But no other athlete has been at that level to fall that low to rise back up. And I remember having conversations on the show about Tiger Woods. We would watch, but there was no one that thought Tiger Woods had a chance to win the Masters.
Not one person.
Not one person thought. Tiger didn't even think that Tiger could win the Masters. And there are people who are closely connected to Tiger that have said he told them he thought it was over. Right? Because he had the injuries. I mean, we're talking about some of the public derogatory things that came out, but we haven't even mentioned the injuries. I think he had 8 surgeries.
Right, back, so hip replacement. I mean, he went through the ringer with injuries.
That's what I'm saying. It's pretty remarkable when you look at what Tiger Woods has been through. So tomorrow, I'm looking forward to this conversation. We're going to be joined by Kurt Sampson, again, a terrific golf author. If you love the sport of golf, you probably have read some of his stuff. I'm really looking forward to it. We're going to talk about Tiger Woods. Also on the show tomorrow, we're going to have more on the local sports front. I'll announce it right now. New head coach for Pinnacle Baseball and Basketball, Coach Ray Jones of USU Eastern. USU Eastern assistant coach. He is going to take the head coaching job for baseball and basketball. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by Pinnacle Athletic Director Mark Stuckenschneider. We'll talk about that hire. And again, Kurt Sampson will join us to talk Tiger Woods. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow's show. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Thank you to Coach Todd Jeffs and also Bill Lasky for always taking out the time to join us. Be safe. We are out.